All right, what do you have for this one?
Bro, I don't know. I was kind of excited for this fight, right? I was like, this probably after Ankalaev is a number one contender fight.
All right, welcome to another episode of Two Fight Fans. I am the first fight fan, Colin.
And I'm the second, Stuart.
And today is part one of our picks and predictions for the upcoming UFC 300 card. Today we're going to pick our top picks for the undercards here, and we have a little game, a little wager that we're going to start doing for all of these type of events. And Stu, why don't you explain the rules that we're going to do for this?
Right. So the wager is just mostly to see who gets to decide which terrible MMA movie the other person has to watch. That's going to be the wager. And at the end of this, whoever loses has to watch a terrible MMA movie, whether that be like a Randy Couture direct-to-DVD film or an actual like the David Mamet Red Belt movie, which I love David Mamet, but still not a great movie. And then write a 5-paragraph essay to be read on the podcast. But the way the rules work is there are three wagers that can be made on any fight. And each wager is worth a variety of points. So the most basic wager is who will be the winner of the fight. That will count for 1 point. If you also guess the method of victory right, whether that be knockout, submission, decision, split decision, majority draw, doctor stoppage due to 30 eye pokes, that counts as 2 points. And then anything specific that you call out. So let's say, for instance, there's a women's strawweight fight. I'd probably bet there's going to be a lot of head and arm throws in that one. And probably failed head and arm throws that will lead to back control for the person attempting the throw. That counts as 3 points. You don't lose any points for getting anything wrong. So it encourages us to kind of ante up overall. But you must at least make one wager per fight. So you can either wager the lowest number of points for who will win, or you could say, hey, I don't know who's going to win, but this is definitely going to end in submission, and that would count for 2 points. Or if you have a specific random pick, we'll do that. We're going to tweak this as we move forward. This is the first pay-per-view that we're trying this out at, and so maybe we'll find that this isn't the best way of kind of gambling away our time on Earth to watch bad MMA movies, but that's what we're going to go for now.
Yeah. So, okay. But we're just going to start. Let's just start at the very first fight of the night here. The bantamweight fight between Davison Figueiredo and Cody Garbrandt. So, Stu, what is your prediction? What is your bet?
Well, looking at this fight, the thing that makes me really worried is I think this could actually be a pretty boring fight. Cody Garbrandt and Davison Figueiredo both are a little shot, a little washed in my mind. I watched both of their last fights today, and they both are really hesitant to throw any punches, really kind of like take the initiative in the fight. So I'm worried that this could be really boring, but both of them have good leg kicks, good jab when they remember to use it. I think the wager I'm going to take, it's going to be really boring, but I just think Davison Figueiredo is probably going to win this because I don't see many ways for Cody Garbrandt to win rounds in this fight. He's not looked good recently. They both have looked really kind of afraid to pull the trigger a lot of the time. And so I think Davison Figueiredo coming up from 125 to 135 is just going to probably have a little bit more oomph than Cody Garbrandt. So only one bet. Yeah.
One bet. Okay. I am also going to say Davison Figueiredo, but I'm adding in I think he's going to win by knockout in round two.
In round two? Why round two?
I think it's kind of like you said. I think it's going to, there's going to be that feeling out process. Figueroa's fighting for the first time in this weight class. And
not the first time.
No, how many times has he fought here then?
He's fought, this will be his second time he fought Rob Font and beat Rob Font.
Oh.
And not to do any MMA math, but Rob Font beat Cody Garbrandt. Davidson Figueroa beat Rob Font. Therefore,
by transitive property.
Exactly.
There you go. But I'm still going to say round two. I think there's going to be that feeling out process, just like a little bit of gun shy. But then I think Figueroa will kind of just let loose in the second round and knock out or TKO Cody Garbrandt.
Now, I know this is meant to be primarily a prediction show because it is 3 a.m. and we're in a warehouse in Canarsie filming this very late at night. Do you think this should have been the fight that Cody Garbrandt took next in this division? Or is this bad matchmaking? Because this smells a little bit like bad matchmaking to me.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like Cody Garbrandt will not... I mean, I feel like he wouldn't turn down a lot of fights, you know, and I think he's looking for something that could be, like, you know, a big win to get him building some momentum again and go and put him, like, back in consideration for whatever. But, yeah, honestly, it's a little tough.
Yeah, why not a Dom Cruz rematch then? Because Dom Cruz is ranked. It's a fight Cody Garbrandt clearly won last time. But it's also a fight where Dom Cruz, I'm pretty sure, would win now.
But is he even still fighting?
Yeah, man. I mean, he's around. He's doing something.
Is he?
Yeah, I think so. when was the last time he fought? Maybe it was against Chito Vera. I'm not sure. Now I've derailed this whole thing going down the Dom Cruz wormhole. Yeah, it was Chito Vera back in 2022. Hey, it's only, you know, a year and a half, 2 years away. Like, it's not terrible.
That's about the average time for him between fights.
It's better than Davidson Figueroa, I feel like, for Cody Garbrandt. Because Davidson Figueroa knocked Joe Benavidez out. And when Joe Benavidez woke up, he was screaming. In that one fight. And that's, I'm worried that that might happen to Cody. And that's not a good feeling to have.
No.
But anyway, so we're both picking Davidson. You think Davidson second round TKO.
And you think decision.
I don't know.
You don't even have.
It could be one of these things where either one of them is chinny enough where they could spark the other one out. And Cody could easily, he's still got really fast hand movement. He has a good jab and leg kicks when he decides to throw them. But he seems to forget he has those tools. So it could be something where, like, they kill each other in the first round, or it could be, you know, five strikes thrown each round, and then it's really boring. So I don't know. But I am pretty confident it's going to be Figueroa over Garbrandt. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Move into our second fight then. Bobby Green versus our boy, Jimmy Miller.
Yeah, why don't you lead it off?
All right.
What do you think?
I'm saying Jim Miller by submission in the second round again.
Now, why would you think such a thing?
Why would I think? I got this, like we were saying before, I got this feeling.
So these are a lot of these feelings are coming from deep in your plums. These aren't logical picks. They're just, they're loins picks is what you're telling me.
Trusting my viewing and MMA loins right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to go get you on that. I think it's going to be Bobby Green. I think it's going to be Bobby Green by TKO. I don't have a round. He's got the reach on Jim Miller. Jim Miller has good leg kicks. Jim Miller can move well, but Bobby Green is just... he's just way too fast. And Jim Miller, I don't think, has won a fight... one and hasn't gone to the ground recently. I think maybe he had one TKO, but of all of his finishes over, I think, the last like seven or eight fights, they've all gone to the ground and it's all been they've all been submissions. I think that Bobby Green is just way too fast, and he just hits too hard, and he's just way too slick on the feet in the first round for Jim Miller to get him down. Bobby Green is coming off that Jalen Turner knockout, which is bad, but I think that means that Bobby Green, I hate to get into the kind of like, it's one of the things I hate the most about like MMA picks is when people are like, I think he's got the dog in him this time because whatever. But I like, he is coming off a knockout. Like, I feel like he might be, that might give him a little bit more urgency in the fight. And so, yeah, I think, God, I'll be happy though. Like, if you win this one, like, I'll be happy for Jim Miller to,
yeah,
to get the win.
I'm hoping he gets, like we said last time, I want three wins across the three centennial events. Like,
yeah, that'd be so great. Awesome. Yeah, and then retire, Jim. Like, you're a stud, but like, you gotta, fist fighting is not something a 40-year-old man should be doing.
No.
But Bobby Green's almost 40 as well. Again, another one of these matchmaking decisions where I feel like this should be Jim Miller versus Tony Ferguson, like the two oldest guys in the lightweight division. But yeah, I'll say Bobby Green, right? He's got the reach advantage. His straight punching, especially his jab, 1-2, and then he also does have a really great left hook. Like, I think Bobby Green is just going to be too fast and too sharp for Jim Miller to close the distance.
Okay,
and take it to the ground.
And you said what, TKO?
TKO. I don't know what round. Yeah. Don't hold me to any specific round.
No. I got you. I got you here. All right. In the third match, okay, we got a woman's strawweight, Jessica Andrade and Marina Rodriguez. What do you think?
I just watched Marina Rodriguez's a couple of her fights. She's very slick and she's very good on the feet. And if she can do what Yan Xiaonan did, which is circle away, because I'll tell you what, Jessica Andrade cannot cut the cage to save her life. doesn't really have footwork either. She's just like an absolute, like, she's a middleweight, which, you know, I love, brought down to women's strawweight, right? Everything is athleticism. Not a lot of technique. She hasn't really created a flow between her stand-up to her grappling. But Marina Rodriguez has a terrible habit of, like, absolutely, like, crashing in and collapsing the distance between her and her opponent. And not, like, in a very strategic way, just kind of, like, falling into the clinch and then trying to win a clinch battle. And I think Jessica Andrade is, like, the wrong person to be doing that with, especially at strawweight. Basically anyone else, I would give Marina the edge in that, but Andrade is so strong that I think that's just a bad habit that's going to come back to bite her. Now, can Jessica take her down off of that or do anything with that? I'm not sure, but my gut goes with Jessica. I'm just going to pick Andrade. No method, nothing crazy. I will make one crazy bet.
Okay.
Jessica Andrade will go for a head and arm throw, which will end up with her dumping herself face first onto the mat. Marina Rodriguez will get on Jessica Andrade's back and then fall off immediately. So it'll basically be a lose-lose position. But that's one of those random bets I'll make because it's women's strawweight. So a head and arm throw is definitely going to happen. 9 times out of 10, it ends up with the person getting the other back. But if Marina Rodriguez gets a submission off that back, then I lose the bet. But that's kind of how I see this fight going.
Okay.
What about you?
I like that. See, I love that you and I are doing this right now because you're getting all technical. You've got all the past, like, you've done your research and all this, and I have done minimal. I've literally watched, like, clips of all of their fights and, like, I've got the picture now. or, like, oh, I remember your fight from, you know, 10 years ago, Jim Miller. You still got it. for this one, I'm going to say, I'm going to go opposing you again. I'm going to say, because but I'm not. I don't have a like prediction of how or which round. I'm just gonna say, Marina Rodriguez. I don't particularly like as much of what I've seen. Like you said, like Andrade with just her overall ring control and movement. I think those areas where she's lacking will just keep like catching her. I think Marina has enough in her toolbox to take advantage of that.
Yeah, Jessica definitely hasn't like improved technically. She's kind of counted on her athletic gifts basically her entire career. But what I will say is, unlike these first two fights, good matchmaking. Right? Like, we don't quite know what's going on. Maybe it could be this one way. Marina could circle out, you know, take advantage of Jessica's inability to cut the cage. Or it could be that issue where Marina's crashing into the pocket without much care for, like, where her feet are placed or kind of where her balance is will get her caught. Like, this is what good matchmaking is, not, you know, taking Cody Garbrandt, who barely can function, and Davison Figueiredo, who was rocked 900 times in the Moreno fights, and being like, what happens if these two people who have no chins try to punch each other? That's not the best matchmaking, I think. But anyway, last one on the early prelims.
Yes.
Jalen Turner, Hanato Moicano. This is a good fight. And I'll give you my take really fast because it's really, really easy.
Yeah.
Jalen Turner, big. Hanato Moicano, not as big. Therefore, Jalen Turner wins. Mostly because Hanato Moicano gets chewed up at range and struggles when he can't. Hanato Moicano is very good in top control, but doesn't necessarily have like great offensive grappling, right? In the sense of like he's not able to get it to that stage, right? He doesn't have sophisticated sort of takedown game. And Jalen Turner is so fucking huge that I just think he'll be able to crush Hanato Moicano at range. And then when Hanato Moicano eventually tries to start grappling and take it to the ground, Turner will just be able to kind of like outsize him, outmuscle him, and make sure that he keeps it where he wants it to be. So, yeah, I mean, they're both great fighters, but like this, I'm obviously oversimplifying it, but like this really feels like the case of big man squash little man fight. So I'm going to pick Jalen Turner. I don't know. I don't know if this will be a finish. Yeah, you know what? I'll say Jalen Turner finish. I don't know what method it'll be, but just a finish.
Just a finish. Okay.
Because, yeah. Man, the thing that gives me hesitation with that is Jalen Turner was piecing up Dan Hooker in their fight in the first round of their fight. And just, I was like, oh man, Dan Hooker's going to get crushed. But the fact that Dan Hooker is basically immortal seemed to kind of take the wind out of Jalen Turner's sails. And he seemed almost a little dispirited by that. I don't know if Moicano has that durability. In fact, I know he doesn't have that durability. So Turner by being big man, winning inside the distance.
Okay.
That's what I got.
Okay. Yeah. As soon as you started saying that, I was like, I know exactly where he's going with this.
Look, man, if you've ever sparred someone who has like a 6-inch reach advantage on you, I just am not going to be able to touch him. And this hurts.
Yeah. And it is exactly as you said. Like, you've got to be willing to just take a lot of punishment to maybe get in something that, like, that you could get into your sweet house or your, like, your area of expertise. And
the sweet house. I've heard in your wheelhouse. I've never heard in the sweet house, but I like it. Let's say that from now on.
Okay. But yeah, I'm with you. I say Jalen Turner. I can't help but think that he's just gonna like stuff something and just after like beating him up for a round or two and then just rain down like intense ground and pound to take out Hinata Moikano. So, yeah, I'm just going to say Jalen Turner, though. I'm not going to say how or when.
That's a good call. Like, the one thing I will say, though, that Jalen Turner, one of the few dudes I've seen, we were talking about this before we recorded, actually throw a double jab. And like a decent double jab and use it as like disrupting rhythm, actually getting his timing of the opponent. And I love Money Moicano, but I think this is just definitely, this is big man beat little man. Yeah. All right. So next one. So this is actually the first fight on the prelims, which up here in Canada, spoiler alert for anyone who's listening, I live in Canada, is on Sportsnet.
Oh my goodness.
Sadiq Youssef versus Diego Lopez, which I think is like one of the like actually better fights on the card, the one where I'm more intrigued because I don't know where it's going. And since I don't know where it's going, Colin, where do you think it's going?
Yeah. So I had first like Diego Lopez as like kind of like bookmarked because like we were talking about last time, each of these like marquee events had someone who was like not brand new to the UFC. They've maybe had a couple of fights, and this fight or this card launches them kind of into like either title contention or just like bigger name. And I think this is going to happen with Diego Lopez because they've already kind of been positioning him as like, you know, a face of the division or a new up and comer and everything. Also, have you seen the promo that they did where Diego Lopez is dressed as a Spartan warrior with UFC gloves?
Does he have the same haircut as he has normally? The kind of like emo, My Chemical Romance, I shop at Hot Topic,
yes,
mall
he does.
Rat.
Yes.
I have not seen it, but I like it.
Well,
I like it in theory.
You should check our doc because I have it there. And again, I watched a little bit of all of them, you know, of all these guys. But as soon as I saw this, I was like, Diego Lopez, he's winning.
Like, all it took was like bad 15 frame rate guy in the desert with what looks like a mauve curtain on his back.
I thought it was a Spirit Halloween costume.
Spirit Halloween. That's exactly right.
And that did it for me. So again, this is not based on anything logical or anything. This is from the heart. So
yeah. Hey UFC, if you guys need a social media manager who's not 16. And like interning, like give me a call. I actually have done digital marketing for like 10 years. That's my day job. And this, because this is, I mean, this is some bush league shit I'm looking at right now. This is a bad promo.
I fucking love it. I love
it. Oh man. Well, I'm glad you're picking him because I, you know what, I also am gonna pick Diego Lopez. Sadiq Youssef is great. God, it's this is the fight I'm like the least confident in any of my picks. Like I legitimately, yeah, I really don't know. I have the Diego Lopez, he's riding momentum, and that's really all I'm basing this on. Because Sadiq Youssef has some really fantastic boxing, really, really tight boxing, and he comes out really fast. His first like one or two rounds of every fight, he is an absolute demon. His name is like Khamzat Chimaev, where it's like all one round. It was evident in the Edson Barboza fight, right, where he came out the first two rounds. He almost stopped Barboza, and then he drops off quite a bit, right? He's definitely a front runner. And I don't know, right? This is only three rounds. Yeah. Diego Lopez isn't going to have that back three to take the fight. But Diego Lopez is riding a win streak where Sadiq Youssef is coming off of a really hard-fought loss to Edson Barboza. This for me is definitely a plums pick. This is a Diego Lopez. Though I will say I'm less confident now that I've seen that. Just like amateur advertisement in the back with a camcorder. Like, really? Come on, UFC. We saw your returns. Like, you were literally, like, billions of dollars in the black last year. Like, we can step this up. Give me a call. Like, we can get this figured out. Yeah, bummer. But yeah, Diego Lopez. I don't have much smart to say about it other than I think just the momentum is on his side. And this is, I think this will be the most evenly fought match. I think this is sneaky, could be fight of the night overall.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's going to be a really good fight. And, but I'm curious. You don't think, like, since both of them, you know, they fight, you know, strong, aggressively, with speed, but Diego Lopez has a little bit of a size advantage on.
Does he?
I think he's taller and has a reach advantage, and they both look huge to be featherweights. Like they just look enormous when I see them in the ring or the octagon. It is like, yeah, like I don't believe they're like.
Yeah, and they're close to the same age. But has Diego Lopez beaten anyone that is similar to Sadiq Youssef in the past?
Well, he's only had a few.
Like, I guess. That's just my thing. Like, I know Alex Caceres is nowhere near as potent as Diego Lopez, but Sadiq Youssef has beat Andre Fili, who, even though he's always kind of been like a middling featherweight, I rank very highly.
Yeah.
Gabriel Benitez, he did lose to Arnold Allen, but that was a decent fight. And then that Edson Barboza fight, it was mostly because he is such a front runner, and Edson Barboza really pulled out kind of the veteran savvy towards the last three rounds. Like, God, I don't know, man. It's a close one. I'm going with Diego Lopez only because of the momentum, really. Maybe if I could go back and watch all of their fights and really, like, pick apart exactly what I see. But,
yeah,
I mean, Youssef is a slight underdog. Lopez is a slight favorite. So the bettors are also kind of going that way as well. But yeah, I don't know. This is the hardest one for me to call.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah.
All right. The next fight, Holly Holm versus Kayla Harrison, women's bantamweight.
Lay it on me, buddy. What do you think?
Yeah, I gotta say, I think Kayla Harrison is gonna. This is like kind of. I don't want to say it's a cop-out, but I think Kayla Harrison is going to knock out Holly Holm in, like, the first or second round.
Knock out Holly Holm?
Yeah. Yeah.
Kayla Harrison. We're talking about the same fighter, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, because she's the judoka, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, so you're going to backpedal now? You're going to backpedal? Is that what's happening?
No, you know what? No, I will say she will TKO Holly Holm. She'll do some insane grappling, get her control on the ground, and win by TKO that way. She's not going to, like, front kick Holly Holm to knock her out.
Yeah, I mean, boy howdy, am I going to take you to the cleaners on this one.
Really?
So,
really?
First off, I don't think Kayla Harrison makes weight. So let me get that out there. That's got to be like a plus 5 points for me. I don't think Kayla Harrison makes weight at 135 or 136. I think this ends up becoming a catchweight bout where Kayla Harrison maybe comes in at like 136.5, maybe a little bit more, or they bump it up to a featherweight fight. That's
okay.
One.
Okay. Okay. So
two.
Okay.
Kayla Harrison won gold medal in judo. At the Olympics and at the Worlds at 78 kilos, which is how many pounds, Colin?
A lot.
Yeah. So at 171.9, right?
What?
So she's a big girl. She was cutting down to 155. And she was not like, ooh, I'm carrying a little bit of extra weight. She was well-muscled. She was like in shape, elite athlete. So now she's going from 155 down to 135. Holly Holm got famous beating another judoka, mostly by staying away from her. And anytime Holly Holm has been locked up with by Chris Cyborg, Jermaine Duranemi, Misha Tate for the most part, except for the very last kind of sequence in their fight. Holly Holm has proven surprisingly strong and been able to break out of clinches quite well against larger opponents. Her like wrist breaking technique and everything is very, very good. She also has made this weight multiple times and has fought in the UFC multiple times and has fought someone who I would assume the game plan would be very similar to in Ronda Rousey. I think Kayla Harrison not only misses weight, Kayla Harrison successfully only gets, if she gets any takedowns, it will be no more than one.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
And I think Holly Holm wins an extremely boring and close decision, mostly because it'll be a lot of wall install for Kayla Harrison. I think she'll be drained. She won't be able to take Holly Holm down. Holly Holm is surprisingly strong. Again, like I said, when she fought Chris Cyborg, Holly Holm was actually kind of muscling Chris Cyborg around the cage. And I think, yeah, it's going to be an extremely boring fight, but I think Holly Holm's going to take it. And I think all of the things that we as fans have been criticizing Holly Holm for, a lot of wall install tactics, a lot of not as much kickboxing and boxing in her recent fights, but actually just like clinch fighting, I think that's going to come to bear and beat Kayla Harrison.
Okay. Okay. So just for our rules,
mark down all of those things, because I'm going to go ahead with all those. Yeah.
Okay. Harrison does not make weight. Harrison only gets one takedown. Holly Holm wins by decision. So let's just go through it. That's, you can make, or we say you can win 9 points on this one.
Bro, I'm so confident. This is, for being the least interesting fight on the card, this definitely is the one I'm the most confident in. Which I know is stupid, because it's 4 a.m. in a warehouse in New Jersey, but here we are.
All right. All right, all right. Yeah, yeah, okay, okay. All right, I'll take you with that. I like it. I like it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I might be watching No Punishment, Never Return. I don't know what MMA movies are, but like, I might be watching some terrible MMA movie after that bet, because who knows? Kayla Harrison might come out here and fucking Haraya Goshi, fucking Holly Holm into the ground, and then her body explodes. But I don't think you can compete at an elite level at like 171 and then drop down to 155 for MMA and then drop another 20 pounds later in life just to try to fight someone who might be one of the most physically strong fighters who's been at women's bantamweight. Mm-hmm. Like that doesn't sound right. And I know Holly Holm won't be able to do what she did against Ronda Rousey, right? Kayla Harrison's not going to run forward like pumping ones and twos as her feet cross each other. But yeah. I just, if there's an opponent made for Holly Holm to upset, it feels like it would be Kayla Harrison to me.
All right. No, I like it. I like it.
Yeah. All right. Last two fights.
Yes.
All right. Next one. Featherweight bout. Aljamain Sterling coming up from 135 to fight Calvin Kattar, who's been off for a while. He'd blown out his ACL in the Arnold Allen fight. So I think this is his first fight in a year, and he's coming back against the former champion. Year and a half. Fuck.
Yeah.
It's late on me. What do you got?
I mean, anytime someone comes off that kind of injury, you know, and at this like weight too, where everyone is dynamic, everyone is explosive, like that's real tough to me. And I did want to know how Aljamain Sterling will do at this weight here. So I think he's gonna do really well. I'm gonna say Aljamain Sterling, but by decision.
Decision.
Yeah.
Is that based mostly on like Aljamain getting the back and just kind of backpacking for two rounds and then maybe giving up a round, or like what's the complexion of the fight? What's the aroma we're gonna get when we uncork this fight?
Yeah, I think just, you know, like you said, like superior grappling, but not necessarily it like leading to a lot of damage or like submission attempts per se, but just like a lot of really good control and just like dominance in that arena and on the ground. Like, just like basically Calvin Kattar not being able to like figure out the speed and the dynamics of him.
But mostly because, so that'll lead into Aljamain getting takedowns.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's where you're wrong. Calvin Kattar is going to win this fight because Calvin Kattar has fantastic takedown defense. Everyone forgets. Everyone thinks he's just a boxer. What Calvin Kattar is in the old school archetype of MMA. He is a sprawl and brawler. He has fantastic anti-grappling and is really hard to take down, and that's what allows him to just be a hard-nosed boxer. Aljamain Sterling's coming up 10 pounds in weight, which I know he was a huge 135er, but that's nearly a 10% of your weight difference, right? He's putting on 10% of his weight and then having to athletically move around with that. Mm-hmm. He's also a little bit older. Now, Calvin Kattar does struggle against kickers. We saw that against Arnold Allen, and the few times Josh Emmett, who never throws kicks, decided to throw a kick, it did get Calvin Kattar. But I think Aljamain Sterling, who has a tendency in the past to, when his A game isn't like rolling super well, kind of mentally panic and gas himself out. We saw that against Piotr Jan in their two fights. And in the second fight, when he was doing more, but then getting the back and getting that chance to not only physically rest when he was on Piotr Jan's back, but like also mentally rest. Right, I think that's something that like nobody ever really talks about. It's like, oh, it's just about volume, but like you can kind of mentally stress yourself out and exhaust yourself if you feel like something's not going the right way. I think the more Calvin Kattar is able to stuff those early takedowns, the more it's going to kind of add that mental exhaustion onto Aljamain Sterling. And overall, I mean, beyond being armchair psychologist, I just think Calvin Kattar is too long and lanky. And he's going to be able, he has really good takedown offense and really effective takedown offense. And I think he's going to be able to hold Aljamain Sterling off. This is only three rounds. If this was five rounds, I could see it, you know, one or two rounds across five where Aljamain is able to get to the back. And then he's got those two rounds kind of secured on the scorecards. But his first time up at a new weight class, it takes a little bit of time. We hear it constantly. We heard it from Dustin Poirier, Robert Whittaker, Conor McGregor, about like it takes time to adjust to a new weight class. And he's coming in against somebody who I thought was dead after the Max Holloway fight, but came back and like still fought really well. So I think Calvin Kattar takes this by decision.
Okay. Now, question for you. So two things. I know like you kind of mentioned like the weight differences and like putting on weight for that, but you don't think that because Aljamain Sterling has generally been a bigger bantamweight and cutting basically not cutting as much and being more at like his natural weight might not serve an advantage for him?
I don't know, man. Like you've peeked behind the curtain a little. Our good friend Colin has competed in full contact competition in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You've competed in amateur boxing and amateur kickboxing.
Yeah.
When you go up 10 pounds in weight and compete against guys who are just, you know, 10 pounds, not cutting as much, right? There's already not a lot of cutting in amateur boxing and amateur kickboxing. Did you notice your body operating slightly differently between those weight classes?
I will say that the times where I did have to cut more weight, mostly because I was a young, stupid person who didn't know how to cut weight properly. Like, this was me, like, in college, having to cut, like, 10 pounds because I'm in college and I'm not, like, focused on my diet or anything like that. And I had to cut it all in one night and then fight that evening. Like, that was not a great day for me. And the days where I didn't have to do that, you know, again, this at the amateur level, you know, it was definitely, you know, when I was in college at amateur boxing level. But, you know, these guys, professional, you know, been cutting weight, you know, for years and years and years. As long as they're not like ballooning up like Ricky Hatton used to do or Patty the Batty here, you know, I think I think for at least the lower weights here, they can he'll be able to handle that a little bit more. I think it will give him a little bit more. He'll be more natural at it.
Okay. See, I have the opposite that I know can feel healthier, but what I worry is that he thinks, okay, now I can go up. He puts on 10 extra pounds, or he lets himself naturally float a little higher rather than doing the natural cardio or the things that would tax himself anaerobically to get down to that weight class when he's doing rounds in the gym. And then he ends up when he gets to the fight feeling like, oh man, like, yeah, my arms are a little heavier. I am a little bit more sluggish while I'm doing this.
So you think he kind of lets himself balloon up knowing that, oh, the cut's not going to be as bad.
Well, not necessarily balloon up. Like I won't ever besmirch Ricky Hatton's name, but I don't think it's that kind of situation. Right. Like Dustin Robert Whitaker, two guys who I don't think like did it in an unprofessional way or like a haphazard way. They said like it just takes time for like your body to naturally be in that weight class. Like when you have been consciously trying to cut down to 135, that means he's probably not let himself get higher than a certain amount, even when he's in his off season. Right? He's still watching his diet. He's still exercising or doing a specific amount of cardio to keep the weight within a range. And then when you know you're going to go up to 145. You just, since you don't need to do that as much, it's not that you're like, well, I can just fuck off. But you go, okay, well, all those things that were nagging injuries, now I don't need to do cardio as much. And then when the time comes when you're like, you know, in the last 2 minutes of the fight, you're like, ooh, the cardio is just not as sharp. And that doesn't mean that your body can't still do it. But mentally, you go, ooh, this is a little bit harder to push through. Again, not accusing Aljamain Sterling or any of these people of being mentally weak. These guys are, in some ways, like absolutely insane. But I think there's just right when you have that edge, especially against Calvin Kattar or anyone in the top 20 at featherweight, that can be enough. And I think, I think it's going to be a little bit trickier than Aljamain thinks moving up in weight. Though that's me not knowing what he thinks, right? Like he might have this all dialed in. But I just think Calvin Kattar, great takedown defense, good boxing. I think it's not a great matchup for Aljamain.
You don't think the ACL tear replacement is gonna affect his like grappling abilities and takedown defenses?
I'm pretty sure I watched him get murdered 4 times in a row by Max Holloway and then still come back and professionally fight. So I don't think that feels like you could rip off Calvin Kattar's lower jaw and he'd still continue to fight as if there's nothing wrong. I'm a little less worried about that than I am just kind of the physical changes that going up in weight, especially when it's these lower weight classes where every jump in weight is basically 10% of your body weight. Yeah.
Okay. So,
yeah.
All right. You say just cater by decision or what?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I said cater by decision. Yeah, I'll say cater by decision. Why not?
All right. Okay. The last of the preliminary fights. I've said both of these guys' names correct maybe twice. In my like attempts of doing so.
Don't lie to the audience. Never have you said that right.
Okay, all right. So Yuri Prochazka and Alexander Rakic. Okay.
Easy. It's like Radich, but with a K.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right. What do you have for this one?
Bro, I don't know. I was kind of excited for this fight. Right. I was like, this probably after Ankalaev is a number one contender fight. Both these guys are fun. And then I watched Prochazka's Teixeira and Alex Pereira fight. And I watched Rakic's Jan Błachowicz fight. And dude, there's only so many times I can watch somebody lean back with their chin held in the air and be like, well, this is my defense. This should work for everything. And then they, because somebody decides to throw more than one strike at a time, they get clipped in the chin. Before I'm like, well, this is not as exciting as I thought. Yuri's a fun, crazy fighter, and Rakic is, truly huge, and seems like he hits decently hard, but the actual, like, technique and, like, skill level, like, neither one of these guys seems to have any sort of methodology to how they fight, or, like, a systematized way of, like, okay, the two leads to a three, leads to, a right leg kick, leads to maybe a switch kick up top, or, like, and then when I come here, I want to try to hit with an elbow, and then I'll turn my way. Like, they don't seem to have any of that. It's just random, hey, I saw this in a kung fu movie once. and it really bums me out. Thing I will say, Alexander Rakic does have really good leg kicks, and when he throws his leg kicks, he returns his hands to his chin. Yuri Prochazka, very heavy on his front leg, very susceptible to the leg kick, hands never return to his chin. Alexander Rakic, every time he throws a jab or a right straight, he kind of he has a good snap, but then he kind of pauses and lets them drop and return to his waist. And Yuri is very good at extending exchanges. So right, he gets hit and then he comes back with two or three punches. Or Alexander Rakic kind of has that like old school Muay Thai mindset of like, I'll throw two punches, then we'll reset, then you throw two punches. And then we'll just do that back and forth till one of us falls. Mm-hmm. Watching the Jan Błachowicz fight, like, Rakic would throw something. Błachowicz would either, like, absorb it and then come back with two or three strikes. And the first strike would always miss. The second strike, it was about 50-50 if he would miss. And then the third strike would, and it was usually an overhand, would consistently hit Rakic, like, square in the face. And so it's one of these things of, like, is either one of them going to pick up on that neither of them has really defense? And if you throw more than two strikes, you probably can hit them clean. I haven't seen either one of them really do that in any fight. And so it makes me a little like, wow, what is this going to look like? But Rakic has been off for a long time. Yuri's been fighting more. God, like I don't have a winner for this fight. Like, I just think somebody is going to get knocked out within the first two rounds. Because
within the first two rounds, okay.
They both, I've never seen two dudes, I mean, I have at heavyweight or light heavyweight back in the day, but, like, in modern light heavyweight, I've never seen two dudes not care about defense or act like defense is actually not something that a real warrior needs to have in their arsenal. Right, that seems to be like the mindset for both of these guys. Is just, I just am gonna throw my thing, and then either I'll get killed for it, or it'll kill the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, it's cool and fun, right? If you're like a Just Bleed fan, but it actually really bums me out because they both could be so good if they just learned to keep their hands up and like tuck their chins and L step or like use footwork to get out of the pocket. Cause yeah, it's my brother used to say this when we watch Nate Diaz fight, which is like, don't keep it real. Just keep your hands up because, the Diaz brothers would not do that and then get hit in the face. And it's like, that's silly. Just keep your hands up. You don't need to keep it real. And that's, I feel like both of these guys could learn that, that lesson. What do you think? I just rambled for a long time about this fight because it really bummed me out when I saw their two pictures on UFC.com. What do you think?
So this one was one of the few that I watched some of their last fights on. And yeah, I don't know. Like you said, these guys are just like really big dudes who just like, they kind of just like not throw caution to the wind, but it is like they both just kind of have awkward fighting styles, you know, and I think that catches a lot of people off guard. And like, yeah, just the combos, the strikes they throw are just a little bit random and weird. I will say
they're like I don't know if you've ever watched like professional fighting game competitions like Street Fighter, like Tekken, but they're like they haven't memorized any combos. They just like button mash, and it seems to take everyone off guard because they're like, well, you're not doing any of the orthodox things you're supposed to do.
And that is something to be said. Like, it's almost like when you're expecting a very orthodox, skilled fighter, and not saying they're not skilled, but like skilled in a different way that you're either haven't seen before or like your sparring partners don't do. So you're basically like going in kind of blind. Like,
but as Socrates said, what happens when the button masher faces the button masher, right? Like, what does that look like? It's not going to look cool, right? It's going to look silly.
Oh my God.
Right? That really is how I feel about this fight. Like, they both, like, obviously, I mean, one thing I will say is, unlike the very first fight we talked about, which was Figueiredo and Garbrandt, like, this is not the case of two glass cannons. Like, both of these dudes are cannons, but they are made of, like, pure fucking, like, cast iron. Like, these are two howitzers fucking barraging each other. Like, both of these dudes, more Yuri than Alexander, but rely on their ability to absorb, I mean, a metric shit ton of punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And be fine. I just, like, yeah, but so, I mean, is it the thing where, like, maybe Rakic, over the, like, past few years, since he hasn't been fighting, he's learned, I don't know, to keep his hands up?
The secret, like, techniques?
Yeah, like, fucking, I don't know, like, exiting out of an exchange that isn't on a straight line? Like, has he maybe learned to, like, circle away after throwing a combination? I mean, I doubt it, but right? It's a weird thing where when the defense is so rudimentary and you're like, man, if this person just drilled this for 3 months, they might be able to, like, be exponentially better. They could come back and be like, holy shit, they learned how to, like, sidestep? Oh, my God. They're going to be a champion one day. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm. despite that rousing argument, I'll still say Prochazka will win this one. But again, it is going to be one of the, I think there is going to be one of those, just like, where they just both stand in the pocket and just throw wild, crazy strikes from different angles and just like, what is happening here? And it'll be hype, but it's definitely like, yeah, it's exactly as you said, a button bashing affair right there. Like, if someone got the controls to UFC 4 or 5 or whatever it's on now and just button mashed it.
Yeah, dude, like, watch for this exchange. Alexander Rakic, Yuripaska come to the middle. Rakic hits Yuri with a, like, flush calf kick that is not checked by Yuri. Yuri nods at him 3 or 4 times as if, like, they have now entered some samurai, like, fight to the duel. Yuri feints a double leg, throws a rear hand uppercut, and, like, the most looping left hook you've ever seen. The uppercut misses, but the left hook catches Rakic, and then they, like, throw terrible pocket exchange, like, hooks for a minute, and then one of them falls down. If I get that right, I win this whole thing. But, like, I'm pretty sure that's gonna happen. This is the difference. This is why I love middleweight, but, like, everything above that, I just shake my head at. Because this fight, I don't know. I don't know, and it makes me sad because it feels like if either one of these dudes, especially Yuri, wasn't training, like, on a yacht, throwing, you know, jumping roundhouse kicks on a pad, he might be really, really good. I mean, he is really good, right? He's no less than a top 5 light heavyweight on earth, but
yeah,
it's not for any sort of game planning. It's, yeah. Well, those are the prelims. I mean, we busted through them. We still got the main card, which is much harder to figure out and talk about. And unfortunately for me, no middleweight fights to talk about.
No, you do have a middleweight fight.
Next week. next time we talk. Yeah, but
You meant I got you now.
Yeah, yeah, not now.
That's how we'll start off the next one.
Oh yeah, buddy, yeah, I've got so much to say about what is Bo Nicola -1,350 favorite. Yeah, that's gonna be a lot of discussion on that one. but yeah, no, good prelims. Like, right, like if this was if this was a fight night card, if this was like an ESPN card, you'd be like, holy shit, this is really good. So I'm into it. I'm into it. Yeah, I don't know if the home Harrison fight will actually happen, but everything else should be good.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, okay, that will do it for this episode. Join us next time when we preview the main card then. All right.
Spoiler alert, the middleweight fight is not going to be that fun.
All right. On that note, we're going to wrap this one up.
I am one of the fight fans, Stuart.
And I'm the other one, Colin.
And we'll talk to you next time for the UFC 300 main card.
God, you're fucking killing me here.